go to the moon in this decade and do the other things. Not because they are easy, but because they are hard. Because that goal will serve to organize and measure the best of our energies and skills. Because that challenge is one that we're willing to accept, one we are unwilling to postpone, and one we intend to win.
Welcome everyone to this episode of Deep Space High, Sci-Fi TV review podcast, where we discuss the latest and possibly not so greatest from today's sci-fi television. I'm one of your hosts, Jedi Master Steve.
And I'm Sky Marshal Chris.
Chris, it has been a long time since we've recorded one of these episodes.
Yes, it has. But it hasn't been a while since we've seen each other, so...
No.
What's going on?
Not much. And just in case anyone's wondering, there has been... It's been chaotic since our last one came out. It came out the 16th of February, 2 days after Valentine's Day. For those of you who don't know, Texas got hit with severe ice storms, which caused me to be without power for pretty much 4 days. And then after that, I was without internet for an additional, 10 days. So I have not had the ability to record.
Oh, yeah. Is this our first show since all this? Is it really? Oh, my gosh. Man, it has been that long.
It's been almost a month since we put out an episode just because of, I was out for almost 3 weeks without internet or power. And then we just couldn't get into lineup in the last week or so to get us to sit down and record.
Yeah, because I've tried, had to do nothing but finals, but I've had several finals, several papers that I've had to get done. We're getting into that midterm part of the year. And then I had to get ahead because I flew into town for the bachelor party. So I was in Dallas for a little bit. We tried to do...
We tried to record in person together for the first time, but the first night he was here, you got drunk, and then we were in... Austin for a bachelor party, so I didn't get a chance then, and then had another party pretty much when we came back.
Yeah, we were not operating on a lot of sleep during that weekend, so there wasn't a lot of time to record, but it was a fun weekend, in case anybody was wondering.
It's good to be back behind the mic. It has been a while. We're talking about some Trek.
Yeah, it's funny. I was actually watching the original series Star Trek just before I got here. I figured, just finished eating, got an hour to kill. I'm like, I want to watch some Trek. And it was an interesting episode. It was the one where they beam down onto a planet. And I remember it from the beginning because McCoy sees Alice in Wonderland, sees like a guy in a bunny suit hopping around, pulling out the watch. And then he sees a little blonde girl running up like, did you see a rabbit, sir? And I'm like,
oh, I haven't seen that in like a long time.
Yeah, it's the planet where I guess it's a pleasure planet, or what they call an amusement park.
Yeah.
And it was a kind of a play on, oh, back in the day, and you know how that it is. They do it Star Trek. But it's essentially like a pleasure planet to where whatever you want, you got, and they had a factory or whatever, and they can make anything damn near instantaneous.
Yeah. I vaguely remember that.
Yeah. I mean, it was an interesting episode. It's almost like, fuck, because it was based off of whatever they thought. So if their thoughts drifted, they would, in McCoy's case, it ended up killing him because I don't know, he was trying to hook up with one of the red shirt chicks and wanted to be a knight in shining armor, and then a knight in shining armor came to protect the damsel in distress and got impaled with the, what do you call them, the javelin? Or no, the jousting...
The lance or the joust.
Yeah, I got stabbed with the joust, but he was okay because, none of it's harm. It's a pleasure planet.
Yeah.
So it's almost like, what would you do if you were on that pleasure planet or got beamed down there?
I'd be in a Star Wars universe. But that's just me.
Only you on a Star Trek style show would go into a Star Wars universe.
Yeah, probably.
Actually, there's probably a lot more.
Possibly. You. Well, let's go ahead and get into this episode. I think it's about that time.
You can do it! You can do it all night long!
Yeah, sure. Let's do it. Let's do it.
All right, let's do it.
Okay, man, let's do it.
I mean, come on, I just don't see a problem here. Let's just do it.
I'm gonna go do it.
Oh, what do we have in store? I think I got a thing.
Well, today's episode, we are discussing Season 2 Star Trek Discoveries, Episode 11. No, 10, 11, and 12. Entitled The Red Angel, Perpetual Identity, and Through the Valley of Shadows.
Perpetual Infinity.
What did I say?
Identity. Perpetual Identity.
When I put it in the notes, I put it in wrong. My bad.
Like, what? Yeah, because I remember even in that episode, he even said Perpetual Infinity and exaggerated it. And I could tell, like, oh, that's the name of the episode. My bad. Then I looked back and I'm like, yep.
We all make mistakes.
It's all right. Shit happens.
Shit happens. So anyways, in this first episode, or I should say 11th episode, 10th episode.
10th episode, yeah.
At the end of last episode, we talked about Arium, who was the blue robot cyborg chick who ended up having to die because she was corrupted by control. Mm. We see her funeral at the start of this episode. And I think I said it last time. It's been over a month since we've recorded, but I think I said it last time. It's like they tried to play off a main character's death for someone who we've had very little interaction with.
Oh, yeah. It was one of the things that bugged me, too.
And it's like you see all the emotions of the main characters who they've been shipmates with her for so long. But, you know, it's like I feel like they're trying to make me feel emotional, but it's not working because it's not like we're connected to them like we are. Or like we were Colbert when he died in season one, or if Stamets were to die or Brenham were to die.
Mm-hmm.
Or Tilly.
It just didn't hit as much. You know, there wasn't as much impact. Yeah, oh, I agree. I mean, they really tried to force it and overdo it with the overdramatic speeches and the overdramatic music. They tried to overcompensate for the lack of emotions through, different medium, you know, with the music and the...
Yeah. Yeah, it's almost... They gave a secondary character, primary character's death, or maybe even a tertiary character.
Yeah, even Tasha didn't even get as good of a send-off. My goodness.
So it's like...
But then again, people didn't really like Tasha, so...
It just felt out of place. It felt out of place. Mm-hmm. But one of the big reveals was when... You know, a lot happens in this episode. It's really a information dump episode.
Oh my gosh, yeah, there was like 50 scenes.
Yeah, and it's really, you know, at the very start of it, you find out that Arium, in her mind, had this project Daedalus that, again, we mentioned last time, and we find out that the project Daedalus was like a Section 31 ship. I know this is kind of jumping around, but find out that project Daedalus, I said ship, but I meant project, where they were working on time travel because they knew Klingons had been working on time travel, and Brenham's parents were part of this project trying to perfect it, and then they actually ended up developing the Red Angel suit, which is coded to Michael's mom's DNA. So, you know, without that DNA encoding, no one can use the suit. So it's limited to Michael and her mom, essentially. And then they get the idea that Arium thinks Michael is the Red Angel because it's her brainwave patterns that have kind of come through on some sort of, I don't know, information dump or somewhere.
Yeah, I don't know, because... If we're skipping around a bit, I don't remember, was it? Yeah, it was this episode where they capture the Red Angel, but they explain it later.
It was the very, very end of this episode.
Yeah, I think it was towards the end.
It was like the last 15 minutes of this episode. Because there was a lot of build. This whole, the first two-thirds of it was building up where you think Michael's the Red Angel. So, and there's a lot of that build-up just to have a reveal that it's not the case.
Oh, yeah, you're right, because the end is when she found out that it was really her mother, and episode 11 was the one where we kind of go through the whole process of them trying to figure out how to keep her there.
Yeah, because in...
And figure out what to do with control.
Yeah, and in this episode, they're like... Section 31, so Leland and Giorgio are on the ship with Tyler, and then, you know, Leland finally confesses to Michael that he's part of the reason that her parents died, because they had captured...
He is the reason.
Well, yeah, he made a... not an irrational, but he just kind of made the wrong choice because he was young and naive when he sent a team to go recover a time crystal, didn't really cover his tracks properly. And then, you know, the dominoes fell, leading to her parents' death.
Right. Because they got it for that project, which led him... I'm curious how... Well, one, multiple things when it comes to the time crystal. One, it's Star Trek. You got to come up with at least a more pseudoscience name than just fucking time crystal. Come on, guys.
The time crystal. Yeah.
Okay. Two, how the hell would you track that? Did they track the crystal, or and then if they did, was it, you know, what did he have to do to cover his tracks, and how, you know, that seems kind of complicated, and you know, how it didn't seem like it would be that rash or arrogant of him to not be able to do that unless he's just a super fucking genius or something, you know?
Yeah, maybe it gives, like, off some sort of tachyon radiation or something along those lines where it's somewhat trackable or traceable. Yeah, either works. Fuck it. Not English majors. I don't care.
Not even close. Oh my gosh, I sucked at English. But off the point. I don't know. There was just a lot of things that bugged me with this episode. You know, they tried to, again, the acting wasn't too bad from Brenham with all the emotions that she's feeling with, you know, seeing her mother, which especially this is more in the next episode, but, you know, finding out that he was responsible for her parents' death, you know, kind of going through this mistrust, dealing with Tyler. But again, it just feels really forced. And one of the things that bothered me was it's really, you're seeing a lot of change from this season compared to last season for Brenham, because she was very Vulcan-like, composed, non-emotional. This season, she seems like an emotional crybaby.
Off the rails.
You know what? Well, no, it's actually something that really bugged me about these three episodes was that she gets super emotional. You know, what was the point of her living 20 years of her life with Vulcans trying to control her emotions if she just loses it like that and she just keeps going on this downward spiral?
She is
like,
human.
Yeah, but fuck, what's the point? Again, what's the point of the 20 years? Like, she's losing complete control of her emotions.
Well, here. I mean, it's one of those, you think your parents dead for the last 20 years and then you find out they've actually been alive in the future.
Well, one of them has.
Well, yeah, true. So
at least that we know of.
Yeah. So it's just one of those, yeah, I get your point, but then again, you know, if you had a lost parent that you thought was dead forever and ever, and then you find out that's not the case.
Yeah, but you would think that she would be at least a little bit better at recomposing herself or dealing or processing it afterwards.
Yeah, but
you know,
she probably could have done better, but it might just be one of those, you know, the one subject that really lets the floodgates open.
Could be.
So,
and that would explain why they tried to do it with the Red Angel and the build-up, and then to find out that it was her mother that ended up saving her.
Yeah, because then they get this bright idea. It's like, you know, they want to try to capture the Red Angel and try to find out more information, and eventually that leads them to a plan where they're going to I guess it's an abandoned Federation base or something on this uninhabitable world. Where they're essentially going to kill Brenham, force the Red Angel's hand to appear, and then use this technology stuff that makes very little sense to capture her and kind of try to cut the tie from it, jumping her back into the future.
Yeah, well, it worked. I mean, it seemed like it wasn't going to, and they tried to back out, but Spock, being, you know, the guy that he is, he intervenes and makes sure that the plan follows through, and they ended up, you know, succeeding and ended up capturing the Red Angel.
Yeah, one of the
things
that bothered me in this episode, there was a scene where Giorgio goes to visit Stemmons in
Oh, yeah.
Engineering, and then Dr. Colbert decides to drop by, and then, you know, it turns into this whole sexualized Giorgio who's talking about how she would have threesomes with Stemmons and Colbert in the Mirror Universe. And then Tilly's like, what the fuck just happened? And that's what I'm like. I'm like, really? I mean, I didn't... I mean, it's okay. You didn't really need any of this. What is it? We already know Giorgio's a freak in the sheets.
Yeah, but I mean, it was kind of funny. Like, I'm not going to lie. Tilly's the only character.
It was like a cringe funny.
Yeah, but Tilly's really been the only character on this show that I've actually enjoyed watching throughout the series. I mean, like, that was funny as hell. Just her social awkwardness, and she's so intelligent, but she just doesn't know what to do. So she, you know, like, her running into the staff meeting, apologizing for not knocking, and then it's like, oh, well, I mean, I guess it is kind of hard with them. They just kind of open, you know? It's kind of shit that I would do. So it's just funny in that way, you know?
Yeah, and there's a scene, too, in this, in the next episode. What is she doing? No, it's actually this... I'm trying to think of it. She does something where they're referencing Newton's laws of motions, and she mentions that it's her, that one of the laws of motions is her second favorite physics law. And then she starts to explain what her actual favorite is, not realizing the dire situation they're in before Pike is able, or Saru is able to shut her up. Whoever, one of them is able to shut her up.
It's that social awkwardness, you know, not knowing when to keep your mouth shut and not knowing when to speak up and just not knowing what to do. It's funny because it's kind of relatable. You know, I feel like everybody can relate to that.
Yeah. And while we're on the topic of Tilly, we won't jump over it too much, but she wasn't in the 12th episode.
She wasn't?
Nope. I don't recall seeing her one bit. Like,
damn. Now that I think about it, I don't either.
Nope. I don't see her, you know, because I was thinking, we'll get there when we get there. No, she is not in the 12th episode at all. So we won't go there.
Huh. All right. Well, I guess let's.
I was like, because there's not much to it. Like I said, I think this is a decent episode. It's a really, you get a lot of information, and you could tell the writers are trying to take you down one path, expecting one thing for the Red Angel, when you're just like, you know, now they're like beating the dead horse, so you know there's going to be a twist at the end of the episode. So
I mean that's true. And then they try to force a lot of other scenes too. Like, I don't get the Tyler and Brenham stuff. Like, Brenham's just kind of taking it all out on Tyler, where it's like, you know, again, it was kind of that emotional kind of stuff, and they were trying to continue this the love storyline. It's like, this episode felt really forced in my mind.
Yeah.
With a lot of this stuff.
I don't disagree. It was it wasn't my favorites. We got some good information and, you know, a little talked about mini wormholes, but other than that, I didn't care for it.
Yeah.
So we can go on. We can talk about episode 11, Perpetual Identity, since I called it Infinity earlier.
Yeah. All right, well, let's move into Perpetual Identity then.
This one is actually more intriguing than it started off being. Because in this episode with Brenham's mother, kind of, she's just a real stick. She doesn't give a shit. She's like, this, you have to do this, you have to do this. If you don't do this, you're shit out of luck. She's like, it's my way or the highway. Like, she's holding all the cards.
Oh, yeah. Well, you could tell that she's the kind of person who knows that she's the smartest person in the room when she walks into it. And she's not afraid to tell you or show you.
But that, and it's one of those, they did explain it in the episode where she's like, because you find out she knows about the dress Michael wore at her graduation of the Vulcan Science Academy. She knows, she's kind of seen her child grow up from afar.
Yeah, she's seen it through time.
But she's also seen her child die over and over again. So that's part of the reason when she calls for Pike to go to and talk to her, she only wants to speak to Pike. She doesn't want to talk to Brenham because in her mind, Brenham's been dead over and over again.
Oh, yeah. I mean, why would you? I mean, it's time travel's a bitch, you know, because you've already seen her die multiple times. You know, why would you want to put yourself in that situation to be hurt again? I keep thinking of that episode from, or not the episode, I keep thinking of Endgame, where Ronan, or aka Hawkeye, you know, when he's like, that scene, don't give me hope. Because he knows that if they're wrong, it's just going to devastate him. So,
you know, this is one of those things where, even in these three episodes, just talking about time travel. So in this episode, Lin gets taken over by Control and by the Nanites. He, you know, the Discovery team comes up with a plan to transfer the Sphere data into the Red Angel suit to send it into the future so Control can't get it. And then, you know, some other things happen. But long story short, in previous episodes, it feels like we were told that time is fluid. You know, the future is not set yet, essentially. Mm-hmm. But her mom really made it sound like that it is set and that it is very linear. And it's kind of how they played in it. Because going to jump to the next episode briefly, they're talking about after the suit gets damaged and Dr. Brenham is no longer able to jump through time, there's another signal. And they're like, well, we know it can't be her because her suit's damaged. But then again, time doesn't seem like it would be perceived that way. She could be jumping, you know, it could have been one of her prior jumps that she jumped at this point in time instead of, you know what I'm saying? Like, they made it seem like because the suit was destroyed, now it's impossible for her to make any jumps from that point on.
Right.
When she could have made it in a previous jump before she went and saved Brenham.
We'll
put it to you this way. Pike asked her about the seven signals, jumping back to the episode we're talking about.
Right.
And she has no idea what they are.
Right.
Maybe she hasn't made those jumps yet.
That is true. You could have you could have pulled her out before, because I remember they said that there was like 816 jumps. Mm-hmm. You know, they could have caught her halfway through her attempts and she could still be, you know, she could still be by jump 1800 or something could happen to where Brenham gets the suit and both her mother and or both Brenhams were in control of the suit. And that's why Arium said that, you know, you're the one that's responsible. It's all on you, that they were both. They were both in the suit, and because they both had the patterns, almost like a Spider-Man, or I guess the Amazing Spider-Man, because I think in the Amazing Spider-Man they say that he can do it because his dad used his his own DNA to into the spiders, and since it bit him and they have compatible DNA, he could do it, right?
Mm. I don't remember. I've only seen those movies like once. But where I was just getting at, it seems like, you know, they're kind of contradicting themselves, it feels like, because yes, the time crystal was given, so from this point on she shouldn't be able to jump, but who knows, one of those previous 800 jumps could have fallen anywhere in the timeline. Who says she made those jumps in linear order? So she made the first one, so it would be like if she were to make one jump every day for the next 800 and some odd days. Who would say she wouldn't do it 800 days from now and then come back to today and then do it 2 weeks from now and then 3 months from now, and then tomorrow?
Right. Well, the question becomes, when she jumps back, where exactly does she jump back to? Is she jumping back to a planet's base, or is she jumping back to the planet?
I think it's both, because the way it makes it seem like is she's returning to the same time she left. So if she leaves on March 10th at 9:30, and so she's going to come back at March 10th at 9:30. And then she might kind of see how the timeline plays out. And she makes another jump on March 11th at 9:30 in the morning. And then she comes back to that point of time instead of, you know, we see in this flashback of the start of this episode when her initial plan when the Klingons attacked was to jump an hour to give them enough warning so they can get out of Dodge. But she ended up jumping 900 years in the future and then was then tethered there. So, yeah, I'm not sure if she's actually, say, she made all 800 jumps from the exact same time. Like, time is still where she is. Or if she's jumping back to the same time that she left.
Yeah, that could be true. I thought they said that it was almost like a like an anchor pulling her to the same point. So I was thinking that because she didn't go back voluntarily, the gravitational well pulled her back. Maybe it pulled her back to that, you know, that same exact time where they kept, you know, where she originally went back to that same moment in time.
It could have been. It could have been. She could have made all 800 jumps from 9:30 on March 10th, and that's she's kind of stuck in limbo there because of the time crystal.
But she also wasn't in the suit when she got pulled back. So if she went back into space and was pulled back to that moment, the suit and her would not have been together, and she wouldn't have had that protection. So she could have died in space.
True. Well, let's see how that plays out. I don't know if we get a resolution about that.
I don't either, and I don't remember. So, and if we do, it's most likely going to be from season 3. Because we won't get that. We'll get to their next episode since we're almost to the finale.
Yeah, almost there.
Yeah.
So did I cover everything in my jumping around of this?
Oh
no, we did find out that Spock has dyslexia or...
That his dyslexia. Yeah, that's what you were asking about. Like, why can Spock understand everything? And why was Spock the one chosen out of all this? It's because of his dyslexia.
Yeah, he's the only half hybrid. Spock, half human with dyslexia. So he's just the one in a million chance that he'll be the only person who can comprehend what the hell's going on.
Yeah, and I like the Spock. I'm not going to lie. I like the guy who plays him. I think he plays Spock well, especially the more I've been rewatching the original series. You know, I do it every year. I rewatch the whole 5 seasons. I guess this year 6. I guess if Picard, it would be 7. But I don't know. We'll see. But, as I rewatch it and I see how Leonard Nimoy Spock is and seeing how this – I don't remember what the actor's name is. He's done a pretty good job at – Ethan Peck. Yeah, he's doing a pretty good job at combining that intelligent humor, that sarcastic, witty remarks that's just like funny for Spock, you know? Yeah. And so he's been doing a great job with that.
Like the whole conversation that he has with Brenham, he goes, "I wish I was there to see you punch Leland. I think I would have found it most satisfying." It's like, okay, that sounds like Spock. I do like him, and I need to watch the original series because it's been a while, and get a feel for Leonard Nimoy Spock again, and then kind of compare the two, because it, like I said, it's been a while since I've seen that series.
And that's part of the that's also another reason why I'm watching it, is because I wanted to kind of get that live compare and contrast as we're watching Discovery, see like, okay, how are they doing, how is Pike, you know, compared to how he was played by the original pilot, you know, did they do their research on it, or did they just say, fuck it, I'm going to do my own thing, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's one of those, after watching the pilot again sometime, I don't remember if I did it before we started season 2, but just seeing, like, the, how 1960s the future was.
Yeah.
Because he didn't like his ward being on the bridge, didn't want... You know, he's like, oh, what are you doing on the bridge? Women don't belong on the bridge, with the exception of number one, obviously.
Yeah.
It was just, it was very.
Yeah, it was. And then it changed, even just from the pilot to Kirk, it changed a lot.
Yeah.
Kirk's very different from Pike.
And I see why it was an unaired pilot for so long.
Yeah.
So, it is what it is.
Yeah.
But the end of this episode is actually quite interesting and quite entertaining when you know Cyborg Leland is trying to hijack the transfer and Giorgio catches on, because there's something that Leland said while her and him were talking, and then there's something that she overhears Dr. Brenham say about control, and then she connects the dots and realizes that it's a good possibility Leland has been taken over.
Yeah. That was an interesting scene, but what bothered me about it was when Leland beamed down and then they did the Giorgio fight. One of the things, maybe this was nitpicking on my part, but it was more of the same from the Arium funeral, just the overdoing a certain scene, over dramatizing or trying to add in to overcompensate for lacking of something, because you could tell the choreography for that fight scene wasn't really good between Giorgio and Leland, and they were trying to slow it down, slow motion build music, trying to build it up, make it look more impressive than it really was. And it's like, okay, she did a Scarlet Witch takedown where she jumps up, wraps your legs, and flips you around. Okay, it's not super impressive.
You mean a Black Widow?
Yeah. Did I say Scarlet Witch?
You said Scarlet Witch, but I think you were thinking of Scarlett Johansson.
Yeah, I was. Yeah, but I just rewatched WandaVision recently, like not long ago, so she was fresh on my mind. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like the Black Widow kind of takedown, it's like it's not really impressive, and you can kind of tell that they're trying to do the over dramatization to kind of compensate for the lack of quality fight scene.
Yeah.
But yeah, maybe that's just nitpicking on my part.
Probably a little bit.
And then why didn't they just, if Giorgio knew that, or suspect, or if she knew that it was Leland and they were doing the data transfer, why didn't she just shoot the thing that was creating the data transfer so they wanted to get it? It's like,
let me just
you
turn
knew
it
where
off
you put
instead
it.
Of destroying it.
I mean, either works. Like,
no, I mean, she put it there to start the transfer and then she turned it off instead of just destroying it.
Yeah.
I don't know. Obviously, to build drama, that's where the lapse in judgment came. But
wait, did she turn it off?
Yeah,
I thought she just left it running.
No, she turned it off because that's when Leland beamed down to turn it back on.
Oh, okay.
And that's when the whole fight ensued.
I missed that both times because I rewatched this twice. So
sucks.
Yeah, I thought that was weird. So I'm like, why didn't she just destroy it or shoot it or just, you knew where it was at. You know, why go through that whole trouble of. I guess that makes a lot more sense then.
Yeah, she turned it off at one point.
All right.
You know, but this episode ends with, like we mentioned, Dr. Brenham, the Discovery's plan fails to bring her back and keep her in this time period while sending the sphere data into the future. So she gets whisked away, and then they're stuck with, you know, Leland causing havoc. And I think Spock says he ends up with 57 or so percent of the data before he warps off.
Yeah. I think it was something like
that. Something like that. A little more than 50%. So,
Yeah.
And then Brenham's distraught. She's like, hey, that's when she really goes off the rails and she makes no logical sense at the start of episode 12.
Okay. Hang on. I got a question. So they killed, when Leland beamed down, he killed like a whole bunch of air quote, red shirts, because they weren't wearing red shirts, but everybody died. Are they gonna do like that big ass nice funeral like they had for Arium? Because I mean, that's kind of the same feel that I'm getting from him. Honestly, I was a little disappointed that the hot chick died, so can we get like a nice funeral for her as well?
At least they introduced Arium a little bit, quote, a little bit, like whole 5 minutes at the start of some episode, and then you had to get this big dramatic funeral, so I doubt it.
Well, part of me felt like they almost did it because fans were probably criticizing him for having like an android kind of on the bridge and not explaining it, given that Data was supposed to be the first android ever in Starfleet, and it's like, you know, they needed to come up with a reason to have her give an explanation.
Wasn't really an android.
Yeah, well, nobody knew that because she didn't have a speaking scene for, you know, 1.5 seasons.
Yeah,
that one episode. So I feel like it was just kind of an explanation episode or trying to get her involved or give fans that kind of answer. Because I don't know. I don't remember if fans were actually asking about it at the time, because this was a couple years ago when it came out.
I'm not sure, but I don't know. It just feels like Discovery has brought in too many characters. Like I think of Next Generation and even Deep Space Nine, where maybe you have 6, 7, 8 kind of characters that are the focal point, that some supporting characters that gets episodes every now and then.
Mm-hmm. And they get good character development for each of the main characters throughout each episode.
Yeah. And you don't really get that here.
Mm-hmm. It's really just
with the exception of the, you know, whoever's in the captain's chair, Tyler, Brenham, and Tilly and Stemmons.
Yeah.
Other than that, like,
it seems more like the main characters are just those in a relationship dynamic. Because even like Pike, it seems like a secondary character at this point.
A little bit.
Just kind of there in the way. Smart guy, advisor. But I mean, we do get to see more of Pike in the next episode, at least.
Yeah, this one focuses on him a little more. I don't know if you're ready to move on to it.
Yeah, I think I am, unless you got anything else on these last two.
No.
All right. So let's move on to this one.
So episode 12, Through the Valley of Shadows. So this is the episode that starts off where Brenham is irrational and wanting to hunt down Lee Linnet, even though he's like a superhuman nanoid or nanite infested control being, making very illogical decisions.
Now, I should make this point. Some people would criticize saying that it's very Borg-like to go with the nanites and that the Federation hasn't encountered them yet. And like, where could they? One, we're dealing with nanite technology already today. Two, if you've seen Star Trek Enterprise, you would know that when Star Trek First Contact happened and they destroyed the Borg ships, some of the Borg were trapped in the Arctic ice and they revived some of them. And, you know, they've dealt with that in Star Trek Enterprise in the 22nd century. So they already had access to Borg tech. And of course, you know that Section 31 would get it. So it makes sense that they might be able to modify the nanites kind of the way that they did and do that. So not an implausible Star Trek explanation there. I can live with that.
Nope, not entirely. But here is when we see the fourth signal, and that's when we see the deliberation that it can't be Dr. Brenham because she no longer has the time crystal and can time travel with the Red Angel suit. I was like, well, how do we know she just didn't make that already? How do we know, 800 and something jumps were her last jumps? How do we know she didn't get to 1,000? Well, I mean, we kind of know, but...
Wait, did they have a limit on how many jumps they can do?
No, they just said she had logs, like 800 and some odd jump logs.
Yeah.
So. And, Brenham sifted through a lot of them at one point. A lot of her kind of quote-unquote Red Angel logs, like Captain's log.
Right. Yeah, so, they love their logs, don't they?
Yeah. So here I'm really curious on, they don't think it's Dr. Brenham making these seven signals. So who is it? Is there two Red Angels? Maybe we're missing something.
I don't know. I'm thinking if they had the technology to, if Section 31 had the technology to build it once already, and
why haven't they created a second suit?
Yeah, they could build a second suit and they could just use the time crystal and then just, they don't need to get the one from the future. They could already just build another one and send Brenham.
Yeah, apparently, it's pretty obvious where the time crystals are being hidden on Borath, where the same planet where L'Oreal and Volk / Tyler left their infant child.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and then Brenham already knows where all the seven signals are going to be because she's already seen them and
just
go there again.
And this is one of those interesting episodes because you get the Chancellor of the Klingon Empire and L'Oreal coming to meet with the Federation over this planet that is pretty much housing for a bunch of monks who are protecting these time crystals, one of which is their child.
Which I may be wrong, and I have to go back and watch the episode, but I think this is the same planet where Worf went to in The Next Generation and found Kalis. This is the same with the monks protecting.
It might be, because they did say it was one of the first monasteries founded after Kalis.
Right. And then, they acknowledge that the Chancellor has no authority. Gowron acknowledged that, they have real no authority because they would always challenge his authority. If it is, I'd actually be a little disappointed. I'm not going to lie. If they were to do that, especially being time crystals feels so lazy in my mind. It kind of bothers me. But, it seems like they're, again, trying to force a connection. Like, oh, hey, Star Trek fans, look, it's the same planet that, Worf did. Oh, yeah, you're kind of killing it, bruh.
Yeah.
So,
it's one of those things where they're trying to make Easter eggs, but it's wallets. Oh yeah, that's cool. Well, it, also like, oh yeah, that's cool.
It's not. It's not like
each fan might interpret it differently because you might have, you know, for every one of you who's like, okay, you're trying too hard. There's, you know, three others that are probably like, oh, that's so cool. We were seeing this planet again, and there was time crystals on it this whole time.
You know, I feel like those who time watching Star Trek was through Discovery and then watching it afterwards, yeah, they might be like, oh, that's cool. But those who have seen Star Trek beforehand and seen it multiple times and it's or a Trekkie, I don't think so. And I think that Mandalorian is actually a good, you know, example for that because people loved it. You know, if you were a Star Wars fan, you love what the Mandalorian did, you know, both through seasons. I can't. And it's Star Trek is just as diehard of a universe. And from what any Star Trek fan that I have ever talked to says that Discovery sucks. I have not heard one that says, yeah, it's pretty good. No, I've heard it's not very good.
Yeah. So, well, you never know. It might be one of those where the fans of our show need to get out there and comment and let us know. What do you think of some of these Easter eggs in Discovery, or how do you think of Discovery overall as a whole? I know some people out there like it, but that doesn't mean it's your drop dead favorite. This is the best Trek ever kind of shit. Let us know. Hashtag Docus and Trek. Hashtag Deep Space High.
I'm curious if they put out any books on the series, because they like to do that sometimes, kind of like what Star Wars does, how they'll put out books based off of the
like episode. Novelizations of the season.
Yeah, they'll do graphic novels and they'll do like regular novels. So I'm curious if they've done that. Maybe the novels.
I know
are
there was a Discovery comic book at some point because one of my buddies from work would actually pick it up and read it every now and then. But I don't know.
Man.
Other than that, I don't know. But let's talk more about this episode because Pike ends up going down to this planet and we get the super big Easter egg tie-in to his fate. And we learn a little bit more about his fate and how he got injured and put into the wheelchair with half of his face melted off in, I think, season one or season two of the original series.
It was season one, two-parter, episodes 12 and 13. I do remember that. Yeah, it was. I'm glad we rewatched that, or at least I did, because it.
Now, in that series where he makes a cameo, did they say it was a training accident where a reactor leak and like radiation poison essentially was what crippled him?
Yes. Because he got promoted. And I think I sent you
to fleet captain.
Yeah, he got promoted to fleet captain. And then that's when Kirk took over. And then I think I sent you via text message how long Spock served under them, because he said it in the show, and that was one of the points that I made. I think it was like 11 years, 3 months, 5 days, something like that. You know how Spock likes to give those precise answers.
Yeah.
So he served under him for a long time, and it was a long time. I think they said it was about 15 years total gap between, you know, the events in the pilot to when Spock tried to kidnap him essentially and take him back. But so I guess we're in that 15-year window right now.
Yeah.
Did they?
Yeah, I think the season one was like 10 years prior. At least that's what I remember before the season came out.
Okay.
But you did see a lot of that in the emotion. I like that. I mean, I like the actor who plays Pike, the Anson Mount. He is just top notch in this season.
Yeah, he is pretty good.
I liked him when he touches the crystal and kind of freaks out and sees his future. Then he has to rationalize with himself just to get the time crystal to make their plan work. He's like, I'm Starfleet captain. This is my duty. I gotta accept this future for the fate. You know, the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the one.
Right. Yeah. And I guess he's willing to do it, you know, or go through it, because if that future happens, then he succeeds in his mission. And he does save it. So, you know, he's willing to go through everything and end with that life. And I'm curious, because in that 2-hour crossover the two-part episode that explains it with Pike, you know, in the beginning, he's very insistent. No, no, no. I don't want to go back. I don't want to go back to the planet, because I can't remember the name of it. Was it Tau Alpha C? No, it wasn't Tau Alpha C. Veda Taurus 4 or something like that. The planet, you know, he's very insistent that he didn't want to go back.
Talos 4.
Thank you to Talos 4. And I'm curious now that he's seen his future, that he had the chance to talk, you know, with them again in Talos 4, if, you know, that was part of the ruse or if that was just them trying to adjust the storyline or make it more interesting, or, you know, if he kind of knew what was going to happen all along and just kind of playing along. Because it's you gotta rewatch it, because the 2-part episode's really weird, because they have like a court martial where they court martial Spock for kidnapping the captain, and they go, and it turns out to be fake the entire time, and then just a full Kirk. It's a confusing episode, but because they didn't air it, so they pretty much just used it as an excuse to air the episode. So they just aired the episode most of the time.
Yeah.
You gotta watch it. It's a kind of confusing episode, but it's a.
Okay, well let's jump to the Oral, the other storyline.
I thought you were gonna say the Orville. I'm like, yeah, let's go to Orville.
The other storyline in this, because we've been talking about Pike, and there is some big stuff that happens with Brenham, because Brenham asks Saru if she can go and investigate some of these Section 31 ships that did not check in on time. Because apparently they have to check in every hour, and if they're late, it's broadcast to every motherfucker in the whole world. So she has to go. She requests to go investigate, and Spock goes along with her. When they find out that Leland's ship, or I don't think it was Leland, it was someone's ship, ejected the entire crew into space, except for, you know, and one, everyone was dead except for one person, which they beam aboard, who they befriend, and go to the ship, do their thing, and it turns out it's control. What did you think of that whole arc?
A little bit predictable that the one survivor just so happened to be control. Mm-hmm. It was a trap, right? That was the whole point of it. To get,
yeah, it was
Burnham
a trap, because it wanted Burnham there, because I guess Burnham is the
blue. The red ink. Yeah.
So, you know, he control needs to take Burnham out of the equation, or at least manipulate her into the equation so that it works in its favor. So yeah, that's why he wanted Spock to go and do whenever to check out the subroutines or whatever systems to try to lock out control to isolate Burnham. So yeah, it was a trap.
Yeah, it's a trap. No, Admiral Akbar, but nope. It wasn't bad. I mean, it was a little bit predictable. And I think
it was a good bonding experience. There was a lot of bonding between Spock and Brenham in these last couple episodes.
Yeah, and I've been debating on how I feel about the bonding experience. You know, because there's a little bit more bickering and development that we've had with them over more episodes. So to see them kind of get the bonding, I feel kind of conflicted, because it is kind of getting some.
Well, it's almost like a sibling dynamic. I mean, there's times where you and I don't get along, and then, you know, then we hang out and we bond a little bit, and then we piss each other off and we're mad at each other. It's almost like an actual sibling dynamic.
Yeah, you know, it does have that kind of
siblings out there who are, you know, like Spock, and they'll butt heads and not talk to each other for a while, and then make up and then butt heads again and not talk to each other for a while.
Yeah, that's true.
So it does feel like a sibling dynamic. It's, you know,
there was just
grown,
times where
evolving.
It just felt a little. There was times where it felt a little forced. It was a little bit more in the previous episodes. This one was actually pretty good, and it was funny. Yeah. You know, just how Spock was able to, you know, once he figured out that, I don't remember who the name of the guy was that control took over, but once he figured out that Leland. It was control, not Leland, because it was a different guy. It was lieutenant
whoever
from.
She served with on the Shenzo.
Yeah. Once Spock figured that out, I guess the Nanites left his body trying to go after Brenham, and he figured out that he could create a magnetic field, and, you know, just the subtle humor and the perfect timing and the quips, or they did have a good feel to it. They didn't feel forced. They were, very good quality scenes.
Cuckoo, 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 cuckoo.
Now then again, well, you know, it's funny. I complained so much about the, you know, some of the acting feeling a little bit forced, and then I rewatched some of the original series, and the acting is just so terrible. It's like, okay, maybe they are just living up to the original Star Trek. Because you gotta rewatch the original series to see how bad this acting is, at least for some of these guys.
Yeah, I have to rewatch it. It's one of those things that I just gotta sit down and rewatch. So at the end of this episode, everyone regroups on the Discovery, and I guess the entire Section 31 fleet is warping into their vicinity and ready to cause chaos. And finally, Brenham was like, "We have to blow up the ship," and Pike's like, "Let's do it. Contact the Enterprise. Let's blow up the ship." And they initiate that plan to go about blowing up the ship.
Yeah, well,
that's how the episode ends.
I'm curious if the data will allow the ship to blow itself up.
Yeah, that's one of those things where it's like maybe the data will they'll initiate the auto-destruct sequence and the data, the sphere will cancel and kind of like override the computer and override the sequence so that it can't destroy itself.
Yeah. Or why not just jump out of there? Oh, I guess they can't take the Enterprise.
Well, I think they do plan on there, because they said something about rendezvousing with the Enterprise and then to kind of get everyone off the ship and then destroy it. We'll see. We'll have to see.
See,
it did end on a good cliffhanger.
Yeah. And I'm curious, you know, it's just something that's been in the back of my mind when watching this. What is it exactly in this data that causes Control to become self-aware or gain consciousness? I mean, it seems pretty self-aware or conscious to me.
Yeah, I think there's just something to master the human element, or there's just so much information in there. Control can kind of develop itself and evolve to the point where it doesn't need any other beings, because I guess now it's reliant on the ship's computers and the ship's systems, and it's just at that infant stage, and it needs to get through puberty and full-blown adulthood. So these three episodes, what did you think of them?
First episode, no bueno. Second episode, more bueno. Third episode, mucho delicioso.
I kind of liked parts of the first one. The second one was okay. It was weird that Tilly wasn't in this episode, but I definitely like Pike's storyline the best.
Yeah. For me, Tilly has been the best new character in Star Trek so far.
Yeah.
In both Discovery and Picard. So non-already introduced characters like Spock, Pike, you know, so on and so forth.
Yeah, one of the ones that were introduced already.
Yeah. So Tilly's kind of been the highlight of the series so far for me.
Okay. And, fair.
Although I do think that as I said earlier, the actor who's played Spock has been doing very well. Too much forced acting, but other than that, it's not bad for Discovery.
Yeah, I think it's been a good set of episodes. There wasn't any point where I was like, okay, let's move along. It didn't feel bored or dry or like the pacing was off. There were some moments I questioned and that I didn't really care for, but overall, I would probably give it a solid D plus or C minus.
Yeah, that's kind of where I was thinking. It's weird. The first 11, I'd probably give that D minus, or 10, I would give the D minus. 11, I would probably give a C minus, and 12, I would probably give a B minus. So I think that would average out as a C.
Okay.
Great.
Shall we punch it?
Punch it, we can beat it.
Punch it,
kill
it. Punch it.
Punch it!
Punch it!
Punch it, Huxley! Punch it! Let's get the hell out of here.
Let's punch it.
Well, what do we have store for next week's episode, brother?
So next week, we are wrapping the season 2 discussion with episodes 13 and 14 entitled Such Sweet Sorrow and Such Sweet Sorrow Part Dose. So we'll be covering that, and then we'll make our decision on how we're going to go about doing season 3. If we're going to do it in parts like we did seasons 1 and 2, or if we're going to do an individual breakdown, since this will be our first time running through this season.
Yeah. So
we have that to look forward to. Much discussion will happen off the air to kind of figure out where we want to go with this. So unless you have anything else, I think that's it.
No, that's all I got.
That'll do it for this episode. Thank you everyone for listening to Deep Space High. Join us next time as we continue the conversation with Star Trek Discovery.
Don't forget to keep the conversation going.
Yeah, and don't forget to keep the conversation going with hashtag Stockholes and Trek, hashtag Deep Space High, and don't forget to follow our Instagram and Facebook page. I think it's Deep Space High Sci-Fi TV Reviews on Facebook and Deep Space High Podcast over on Instagram. Over there, you can stay up to date with our latest announcements.
We also want to ask everyone to leave a review and give us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts. I mean, it really helps spread the word about our show and helps bring about more listeners.
Yeah, we want to get those ratings up. We're not taking another month-long hiatus, so don't expect that to happen. We'll be here next week.
Yes. Well, on that note, I'm Sky Marshal Chris.
And I'm Jedi Master Steve.
And live long and prosper.